Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us, episode 182. This is a show about all things Linux, whether it be software, hardware, or whatever tickles our Linux fancy. I am Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, and I am once again joined by my good friend, the Linux Maven, the Door-to-Door Geek, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin. How's it going, Door?
Hey, Supercoop. Going pretty good over here, I'll say. We're experiencing, for some reason, an early summer. It's like already gotten hot and muggy out here, which is not good.
Yeah, starting to warm up out here as well. Not so much humid, but all of the flower pollen is out, you know, all the grass seed flying around in the air, causing all sorts of awful allergen havoc. But knock on wood, that's why I have a wood desk, I haven't had any severe allergy symptoms yet this year, and I hope to make it through fall before anything drastic happens to my sinuses.
That's good, that's good. Yeah, the wife wants to go out to Musen Park this weekend. I'm literally afraid of what kind of allergy stuff is going to be happening.
That and then the plague might be there too.
Wouldn't shock me.
Yeah. All right. So, as a quick reminder, if you haven't signed up yet for the Linux the Rest of Us Club, please do so. Head over to podnos.com/Linux for the Rest of Us. Membership is absolutely free in the club. You'll get special updates, special offers throughout the year. In addition to, that is exactly the way that you would sign up for any of the giveaways that we do on the show. Last episode, we gave away 2 BeagleBone Blacks and a Linux Fest Northwest swag pack full of stickers, magazines, all sorts of little knickknacks. Those will be shipping out here any day now. And, Door, do we still have some more items to give away even today?
We do have, I believe, 2 more BeagleBone Blacks, but I'm going to wait another week to give them out. I haven't even shipped out the 2 from last week yet. A, slipped my mind. Then when I published the show, I remembered, and I haven't had a chance to go to the post office to pick up the boxes yet.
Okay. So we'll wait until next episode, which is only going to give each and every one of you listeners even better of a chance to sign up this week if you haven't already, and then be eligible for when we give those away next week and anything else we give away in the future. So once again, head over there, podnos.com/Linux for the Rest of Us, to sign up for the club. Membership is absolutely free. All sorts of good benefits. Definitely check it out.
Yeah, and I will say, I am finding out a little bit more that can be done with the BeagleBone Black, partially because of that announcement of that new chip device, that $9 on Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit less powerful than the BeagleBone Black, but I'm finding out more what the BeagleBone Black can do. So definitely a little fun device.
Yeah, I haven't yet to actually play with one, so I need to do a little bit more research and see. And plus, it was that and then the Arduino really were kind of like the de facto standard when you thought of these smaller work computers before Raspberry Pi hit the market, and rightfully so, stole a lot of the thunder and mindshare.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Very good. And as always, we really, really do like what Think Penguin is doing for the community at large. If you are interested or have a need to buy any hardware coming up soon, whether it be a small form factor PC, laptop, desktop, or also a variety of different equipment, you can buy it at thinkpenguin.com. If you do see something on there that you like, send an email to podcast@linuxfortherestofus, and we will send you a coupon code in order to save you a little bit of cash on that purchase. And remember that they support the community at large simply by not only selling fantastic hardware with open source software on it, but they also give back to the community in way of some of their profits go right back into the development of some of the software. So check them out at thinkpenguin.com.
Absolutely. Good people offering good services and good products at a price where they can still survive for another 12 months.
Yes. So, big news. I just found this today. Door, I know who you are. You know who I am. Mm. Everybody listening should know who we are. And there should be no surprise whatsoever that you and I both know what MAME is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the popular arcade game emulator MAME is going open source.
I'm not going to lie. I kind of thought it already was. because it's everywhere, downloadable everywhere, and seems like everyone was putting it into their projects. But yeah, this is completely news to me.
Yeah, I think that if last week you'd asked me, is it open source? I would have said yeah, and then maybe thought, well, is it? It's got to be, right? But it's official. The change also affects MAME's sister project, Multiple Emulator Super System, or MESS, which includes code to emulate console and computer games. The project director says, from now on, there will only be one release executable that covers all arcades, computers, and consoles, but we will stay under the name MAME. That is our trademark.
Very good. I can see in maybe a year us not having to worry about having all these different emulators in the back end and trying to find GUIs to paste them all together to one unifying experience. We might be able to here in the future just say, dude, just use MAME. And it's going to be the complete engine for all emulation. That would actually simplify a hell of a lot of stuff.
That would be nice. I think that when it comes to ease of use with these, I mean, with emulators in general, it comes down to two things. One, the interface, and number two, what systems that the emulator actually covers.
Yeah.
So how does it look / operate, and what actually can I play on it?
Right.
Yeah. And by an extension of that, what kind of controller support does it have? But I'd say across the board, I haven't been able to use anything without reason, especially anything classic controllers with a USB converter, cable, or box, which you can get just about anywhere nowadays.
Yeah, I'll say as long as you can physically connect it and as long as it's recognized by the OS, I've had very good success.
Yeah. Okay. So I've been doing, I have a new machine I just built. I got to do some other fixings on it. It's not quite, I'm nicknaming this thing the Death Star because it was operational. I think some rebels came by in the night, shot at it, caused it to go into a state of disarray. And I'm slowly building it back up. I just need to get that grant from the Empire. And we'll see what happens. Anyway, but one thing happened last week that I saw it coming. But when something like this happens, you don't really know quite how to deal with it. But I promised myself. Well, what happened was is I used up my last writable DVD disc. Mm. Last one in the house. And I've bought hundreds, if not close to maybe 2,000 of these over the course of, 10, 15 years, used the last one up. And I personally just always thought I could put my distro on the USB stick. I'm just going to burn a disc real quick. It's easy. And that's all I did. But now I have a laptop without a CD drive, without a DVD drive, rather, with no optical drive whatsoever. And I just saw I constantly am breaking these discs in half or crimping them and then tossing them away with outdated distros on. I'm just thinking, I'm never going to use that again. It's not rewritable. And I think in all these discs I threw away, I said, you know what? I'm going to use my last one and I'm just going full USB install from now on, unless it's like dire circumstances. That's it. That's all I'm doing. So I have no more blank DVDs here. So I had to find a good article on how to install Linux from USB, which I've done before years ago with Pendrive Linux. I've tried, there's an option just within Ubuntu to write to a USB media, but I found a great article over at Make Use Of, just a simple how to install Ubuntu from a USB stick. Now, I'm sure that you could definitely just, plug in, pull Ubuntu out of this equation and put anything else in it. But Make Use Of has some great articles, great tutorials, step-by-step instructions. And this is, I think, a good introductory way of tackling this. If you've never installed from USB before, this is a great article for you. And it not only does it cover just making the USB installer on Linux, but also on Windows and OS X in case you happen to be transitioning from a different operating system. Want to give it a try as far as a live environment or just have a USB that you want to install from. This would be a fantastic way. A fantastic resource, rather, to use in order to accomplish that task.
Yeah, I could see a time when I had CDs, but I was using them more for like long-term things, not installation media per se, but CloneZilla, SpinWrite, things like that on CD that I intended to keep. I've been trying to do my Linux installations from USB for a little while. Then I actually had to keep PLOP, P-L-O-P, around on a CD for a while. When a computer wouldn't boot to USB, I could boot to Plop and then in Plop say boot to the USB and then it would work. But I will say on Linux, it's fairly easy because like you said, it's built into more than a couple desktops.
Yeah.
But especially on Windows and Mac, this is not something that they intend even 1% of the users to do. So you always have to go and get extra tools. And I will say it's gotten a hell of a lot easier in the last couple years. And the thing I like about this article is, yes, they cover that. You can get this started from Windows or from Mac, and it also tells you about in Windows 8 how you can do the advanced shutdown method to from a GUI inside Windows. Basically, you can say reboot into an option menu, and then in the option menu, say boot to USB device. So it does help simplify it with that. But I will say UEFI can be a little bit of a tumor. So that's the only thing I say to keep an eye out for. But if you can boot to the live instance, you're typically not going to have issues. Yeah, this is the kind of thing I want to say I almost forgot about because I've been doing this so much. And this is the kind of thing to bring back once in a while, just to remind people, you know, how to do it. And they do have a separate article I'll make use of that is linked to it, which does talk about UEFI, how it works and how to, quote unquote, work with it.
Yeah, nice and detailed. And yeah, it's kind of like another thing about make use of too is that they have those the kind of like the Amazon version of, oh, if you like this, you might also enjoy, where they have a list of articles that are related to the one you just read. So yeah, you can you can get caught in kind of that that time spiral where you're like, oh, I'm just gonna go check an article out, and then all of a sudden it's like 5 hours later the sun is coming up and you're like, well, what happened? Oh, yeah. but I thought I had time. Yeah, so if you haven't installed from USB or haven't done it in a while or know someone that would benefit from that information, definitely check the show notes and check out that article. My last one for the week has to do with Docker. Docker is getting obviously a lot of press. Overall, I would say that a lot of people have heard of it, but if you took a survey or questioned some people and it said something to the effect of, okay, so you've heard of Docker, can you tell me exactly what it does in layman's terms? I would venture a guess that some people couldn't tell you exactly how it works.
Yeah, I have no problem saying if you take your average technical division and survey them, 1% might know what Docker is. And of that, maybe one half of 1% would actually understand what it is and how it can be used. This is the kind of thing I really do encourage people keep in your belt. Just so when you're someplace and you mention Docker, they say, and when they give you that look in your face, you could at least shoot them this link. It gives a good basic short, and this is what I like, short, concise descriptions about what is Docker, what is a Docker image, what is a Docker registry, what is a Docker container. Those are the, you know, some of the basics to it. And then it gives a quick example of how do you get started using Docker. So this is the reason I like this one. It takes you literally from knowing nothing to doing your first time playing with Docker on an actual computer and seeing what you can do with it.
And I think that that is really what it does take. Seeing screenshots and some video is what it took to kind of unlock it for me with how it works, and it kind of clicked. But even then, that was over a year ago at Northeast Linux Fest, to where when we went to Northwest Linux Fest last month, there was that guy who did the presentation on Docker, which I thought was fantastic.
Yeah.
But even several people I talked to, they're just like, I guess I kind of get it, but not really. So I kind of likened it to when you get a comprehensive explanation of what it is, unless you really kind of put it into practice, just like everything else, it's almost like you're trying to hold on to all the details from a dream, and every day you don't really concentrate on it. It just falls that much farther out of your head.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, and I will say Chris Berg from Fire Maple Industries was the guy who did the talk at Northwest Linux Fest. His pace was good. Where he started was fantastic. I was really afraid he was going to start off the talk speaking leet speak to people who wouldn't it would be really hard to keep up with him. He started out at a very basic level, and he slowly ramped up to what it is, how to do it, what it means, why it means kind of thing. That, to me, was the definition of what a good talk is.
Yeah, yeah, and he was also very friendly afterward. In fact, it's possible that we'll have a follow-up conversation with him, hopefully on this show or somewhere else on Podnuts, but he said he would be available to speak to us in more detail about it, because you could tell that not only was he passionate and knowledgeable about it, but just like you said, you know, his presentation was ordered in such a way to where it was very conducive with learning from a beginner perspective. And his Q&A was also very nice.
Yes, and he was gigantic.
No, he's a huge guy. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't realize when he's giving the talk, and then when I was walking off to him to shake his hand, thank him for the talk, as I walked up, I realized, oh, he's kind of tall. He's pretty tall. Wow, he's really tall. Holy crap, this guy could crush me like a bug. I swear he seemed like he was at least like 6'7", 6'8", like tree trunks for legs.
But to be fair, you were looking at him through one of those rearview mirrors with the sticker on it that said objects may appear larger than they actually are.
That would definitely explain it.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. All right. Cool. All right, cool. Dor, what do we have from you this week?
Well, the first thing I wanted to bring out, I've been toying with, I shouldn't say this out loud, but I'm going to say it out loud. I was toying with the idea a couple months ago of the idea of having a quote unquote Podnuts Raspbian image, where it could basically, you put it on your network, it would automatically subscribe to the Podnuts shows and make it available on a media share on your computer or on your network, so you could easily access all the Podnuts content without having to worry about subscribing, maintaining the archive of it, if you will. And I will say, this is what caught my eye. It was an article over at Unix Men, emulating the Raspbian using QEMU. And the reason why is I just keep thinking, to create custom Raspberry Pi interfaces on the Raspberry Pi itself is a little bit of a slower process. If I could emulate that hardware on a real, quote-unquote, full-fledged, multi-gig, multi-core desktop computer, it could make developing that environment much, 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 much quicker. So I stumbled across this bookmarked. Haven't had a chance to play with it yet, but I will say Matthew Williams was also talking to me about this. We both came to the same result. QEMU can do it, but it's a question of then how do we get the hard drive image and configuration off of the virtual OS and put it onto a real one. That kind of confused us, but we know it's possible. So this is like step one. If I actually want to do anything like that, it's definitely going to take a lot more research, but this is a great jumping off point.
Yeah, I saw this article earlier today too, as I was kind of digging around on Unix Men, as I often do, and I had never heard of QEMU.
Yeah, it is like, how can I put this? It is like the command line tool for most graphical applications. There are other graphical tools to do this. Some of them actually use QEMU as their back end. QEMU basically has no interface. It's really more of us.
For headless systems, right? Yeah,
exactly, for headless or for server emulation.
Now really it's desktop. Coming back together. All right.
Yeah. So even though you might have used it, you might not even know you used it. And I will say, I did have a tool on Windows. Yes, on Windows. I could double-click an ISO, and it would launch a standalone instance of QEMU and boot up that virtual that ISO in a virtual environment, so I could at least play with. So it's actually cross-platform, and I know it's really powerful and customizable, and that's the key when you want to emulate non-native hardware, an ARM processor on a x86 or 64-bit processor.
Okay, well, that makes more sense.
Yeah, and then I found a second link. This one is by Xmodal. We've visited this site many times here, seemed in the last couple months. And this is really, I look at it as an introduction to the idea of at least a semi-automated to an automated environment. Docker is one of the big future technologies. Another big future ecosystem is going to be DevOps. DevOps is the tool chain between developers and system operators, And part of that is automating deployments and building of applications or systems. So you can, using your Raspberry Pi, via this article, how to deploy web applications quickly with UBOS on the Raspberry Pi. And that is the letter UBOS, which means you are the boss.
Damn right I am.
Yeah. To me, this was a really simple step-by-step-by-step introduction to how you can automate pushing of code to a production server with a Raspberry Pi. So this is really, to me, a great first step in what literally could be a 10-year dive into research, into career-changing opportunities via a now, you can even get the old Raspberry Pi for, I think, $25 now, and this software, and you can get started into automation and pushing of applications to different servers. So I thought this was pretty cool.
Yeah, I would agree. Something also I haven't dealt with. I really, really need to start playing with my Pi more. In fact, I just got my Model B out yesterday. I'd hold it up to the camera, but my camera isn't plugged in. That would do me absolutely no good. I'm trying to figure out some projects because you know just as well as I do, and there's lots of things to do with these little boards.
Oh, yeah.
Very good, very good. All right. So tell me about GLPI.
Okay, this was one of those things I literally stumbled across, very accidentally, in fact. I was just browsing, perusing, found this site called Tech Mint, which I do believe I actually brought up on this show maybe a year ago, TECMINT, and it's Linux how-tos and guides, a very explanatory site is the way that I put it. And I saw this article, and it was just called Install GLPI IT and Asset Management Tool with Fusion Inventory in Debian Linux. And I thought to myself, I have no idea what the hell that is, but if they're doing it on Debian, then it should be business focused and it should be focusing on stability and longevity. IT and asset management can be construed in multiple different ways. I will say, looking at this article, this application can help with, it doesn't do by itself, but it can help with hardware, software inventory, network and printer hardware inventory, support for Fusion inventory, do not know what that is, and OCS inventory, never heard of that. But it can also do things like help desk tracking, SLA management, change management, project management. Pretty fancy stuff here going on. Then I ended up going to their website, which is glpi-project.org. By default, I want to say it was in French. I don't know. Whatever it was, wasn't my language. Had to click the little British flag on the top. Voila. And what I got to say is this is the kind of thing, if you are doing support for small, medium enterprises kind of thing, this is the kind of tool that literally could take hours and in some cases months of work, and I mean backbreaking work of crawling under desk, going through switch closets, writing down information, transcoding it back on your computer into a very easy, simplified, dare I say automatable process where you just run it against your network and you can get a good amount of inventory reports and just information. I really do like the idea of this. I do not believe it is completely GPL'd, but it definitely has GPL'd components to it. So it should be really easy to at least grab a hold of and play with. If they do have a paid version, it's unclear to me. But I will say this just to me looks like really good software, good start of good software. Hopefully it will get better.
Well, hopefully, I mean, as long as it's maintained, it will get better over time. But yeah, I just did not realize how kind of a Swiss Army knife this is for information, as an information resource manager. Just the stuff you said it could do, I had no idea.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing, it's not hip to talk about, you know, it isn't flashy, it doesn't, you know, compare with a new wearable kind of thing in coolness. But I tell you, for the people who have to help manage IT infrastructure, this could literally be one of those saving grace things that enables you to take a 2-week vacation because so much stuff got done.
Yeah, and especially when you're talking about doing the management with like doling out tasks, this can be definitely helpful, especially when you're talking about delegation, trying to take time off. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes, and I'm happy to say I was completely wrong. GLPI-project.org, go to about, and license is the very first thing in about, and it says GLPI is free software distributed under GNU GPL version 2 license. So the entire stack, it looks like, of software is completely GPL. Now, I want to just take a second to just stop and explain to some people what that actually means and what it means to the people, to the company that's going to have this on their network. What it really and truly means is once you get this installed, you own it. You never are going to have to upgrade it. You never have to pay a license fee. You never have to tell anybody you have it installed. You never have to audit it and tell people what you're doing with it, how many people are connecting to it, how many clients you have connecting to it, how much do you have this replicated on your network. It literally becomes a tool that you never have to relinquish, you never have to let go, and you never have to do what anybody tells you once you download this software. It's a really empowering thing, I will say that. And and I understand some companies being a little bit, dare I say, concerned about the added responsibility that comes with this. But, you know, it's like Stan Lee said, with great power comes great software.
Yeah, I believe that was Stan Lee who said that.
I believe it was.
Was it Stan Lee or was it just some guy named Stan Lee at your place of employment?
Can it be both?
Yes.
Okay, there you go. It's both.
All right, cool. I'll save it for the end. Yeah, I'm sorry. Please continue.
Okay. That's just really cool, and I want to make sure that, honestly, guys like Martin and Josh, who are actually responsible for like entire networks and domains, see that kind of software, because that could be really cool. Then I got this next one, and I'm sorry. Every time I see the name Seth on opensource.com, I just have to, I actually read some of it. I'm not going to lie. Not all of it, but I actually do read some of it. Over at opensource.com, how to make titles look good with KDN Live. Okay, first foremost, nothing is perfect. Okay, there is no Microsoft software that's perfect. There's no Apple software that's perfect. There sure in the hell ain't no Adobe software that's perfect. Okay. All software has little nuances that you have to be aware of, and you have to basically work around. Okay. What I like about Seth is he's very open about what a piece of software doesn't do fantastic, but he shows you typically how you can work around it and still do great stuff. One of the lines in here said, and I had to agree with it, doing titles traditionally in KDN Live is not super easy. So he basically takes you through a pretty good length, step by step, by step, by step process on how you can make good looking titles. This is the kind of guy where, you know, if I ever want to be taken seriously for being able to create anything graphically or video wise or even audio wise, I have to follow his lead, because it's painfully obvious he knows much, 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 much more than the average person. And the information he basically relinquishes about these tools, I think, is just fantastic.
Yes, very, very passionate in the media creation manipulation space. And you can see a lot of his work online. And it's funny because I actually forgot. I recognized the name, but then actually just during the show here, I remembered who Seth is.
Oh, yeah, he's a man.
Yeah, he is a man. Mm-hmm. Some would say he is the man.
He is, no doubt.
No doubt.
No doubt. And this is literally, on these kind of articles with other pieces of software, typically what you'll see is, you know, you page down two or three times, and that's the whole thing. You know, I've paged down maybe 10 times so far, and it's still information, not comments. But I also love the fact that he simply adds, in some of his screenshots, a big fat green arrow, and next to it, it says, click that button. He's telling you what to do, people.
Wait a minute. So he had one long article presented on one page. It wasn't broken up into 8 parts in order to generate more ad revenue over 8 different pages?
Nope. That no, is one of fabulous things I think about this website.
No full page takeovers by Jose Cuervo or Geico in the middle of reading paragraph 2. Nothing like that at all.
Nope. Not once. Mm,
interesting.
Or they're crazy.
Yeah. And I got to say, I have, it's been years now, but I'm getting back into playing with video. My non-linear video editor of choice on Linux right now is KDN Live, based on 3 that I tested for a few hours. I was just kind of messing around with a few of them. Very, very comfortable. And when you get into audio and video editing, and we've spoken about this before, I'll make this brief, but try to buy the toolbox that might be full with more tools than you really need in this case. Especially since, when I say buy, I mean they're all free. But try to find an editor that will be able to input and output in a variety of formats, and that has a lot of bells and whistles you might not need. Because at the end of the day, something like this, and Dor edits a lot of audio, he knows this, you could, out of the hundreds if not thousands of tools inside of our Dor, for instance, an audio editor, you could use about 10 or less of them to actually just edit audio and without cleaning it up and doing a bunch of complicated stuff. So if you look at some of the system trays for these, tool trays for these programs, they can seem overwhelming, but know that as long as you can do, cut, copy, paste, and maybe insert some transitions, so far as video concerned is going, you'll be just fine.
Yeah, and I'll say this is the kind of thing I really do enjoy about this kind of software, is if you want to, you can, quote-unquote, freeze-dry a computer or put this software in a virtual machine and freeze-dry it, to where you know you never have to worry about it. Barring hardware failure, every time you boot it up, quote-unquote, the software is going to be in the exact same spot, work in the exact same way, and, output in the exact same fashion without question. A lot of proprietary closed-source software always wants to connect to the internet, and we've heard more than a couple of times in the history of mainstream applications, people freaking out when upgrades come down the pipe, and they literally swear off applications. With this type of free Libre software, when you download it and you install it, if you like it, you don't have to upgrade it ever. Or if you want to, you can install it on 2 computers. Have one, your freeze-dried system, you never upgrade it. Have it on another, and upgrade it. And then when you see something good that you like, that you value, that you need, you simply update your other computer system, and then you turn that one back into your freeze-dried system. You don't have to worry. You don't have to stress about, is this going to change? Because some software changes for change's sake to help, let's say, training revenue budgets.
Yeah, very, very, more often than not, when you're seeing either incremental releases or, 4.0 to 5.0, big releases, for example, in the multimedia space, you're usually talking about interface enhancement, some new bells and whistles, which are not going to be universally used across the board by everybody, editing whatever it is, image, audio, or video. You have to have a little bit of glitz and glamour to get people to act in order to buy and or in the case of free software, use the software package. But it's never, I've never seen a release just that puts the previous one to shame, unless it was 5 years or more in between releases.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very slow and steady kind of thing. Okay, I'm going to talk about this link right here super quick, only because I really don't know what the hell to think of it. And honestly, Cody, I want to know what your knee-jerk reaction to it is. And it's over on Tom's Hardware. If you don't know about Tom's Hardware, my Lord, what world do you come from? But the link article is Panasonic, not the most forward-thinking company that I think of, but Panasonic releases first smart TVs running Firefox OS. What? Definitely caught my eye.
My knee-jerk reaction would be to just stand up and start clapping, because when you, and I've done a lot of have done a lot of research. When I say that, it's probably been honestly about 4 or 5 years. in the television space when it comes to manufacturing, you know, because I was in an industry where a lot of people were coming to me, what TV should I buy? And, you know, friends and family, me being the geek that I am, like, you know, what kind of computer should I get? TV, phone, this and that. So I try to keep up on it. But traditionally, when you would think of construction of the units themselves, and especially when you're talking about displays, the color palettes, how well it their chips and displays held up to motion in the case of you know, the 60 versus 120 versus 240 megahertz that we're seeing now in a lot of newer displays. Back in 2005, that was almost 10 years ago. Anyway, Panasonic was always known for their, I would say, next to Sony, because Samsung hadn't really entered the market as far as TVs. They were more of the everything else that Samsung does, including good LCD monitors. But Panasonic and Sony were kind of like the heavy hitters as far as, this one did reds and blacks very well, this one did blues and greens very well, to where if you walked into like a now defunct Circuit City, you would see the differences between the two of them, because they would have, you know, the 15 or 20 screens playing the same clip from the same film, and you could go by and look at them. So they're by all means still a heavy hitter in the space. But and I think that just like with anything else, it takes an industry leader to adopt these newer software, for instance, Firefox OS, onto their existing devices in order to have it have any sort of a prayer for making an impact on the market. Now, who was it? Was it Ubuntu that partnered with LG to put Ubuntu on a, was it a fridge or a dryer or something?
I do think it was LG, and it wasn't a fridge, which in a fridge, really?
What it was some appliance, right?
Yeah,
It wasn't a washer and dryer. Same type of thing, but I like the idea of this simply because you have two well-known companies coming together, and obviously, you know, these giant displays, I mean, they're used for all sorts of different applications throughout the home, mm-hmm. and throughout, you know, corporate markets, etc. So all it takes is, and when you're thinking of smart TVs in particular, personally, my personal feeling is they're all garbage.
Yeah, they're all stupid.
As far as the smart implementation, the, you know, the hardware and software that's going to inject that smart into it. When I see the interfaces, which are all varied, you know, there isn't an industry standard among any of them, period. I think, okay, but my Roku can do that better, or mm-hmm. my Chromecast can do that better, or my buddy's Fire TV stick can do that better. So why am I spending the extra hundreds of dollars to have that integrated into the TV when I'm probably never going to use it?
Well, and the other plus to things like Roku, Chromecast, Fire Stick is, if you go on the road, you can take it with you. Or if you go over your cousin's house, you can take it with you.
Or God forbid, I smash it with the hammer, or my kid throws it in the toilet, I could just go buy another one for less than $100.
Yeah, to me, it's like, why would you buy a combination 8-track player, VCR, DVD, Blu-ray player all in one? What the hell's wrong with you?
Yes, that does not only 1080p playback, but 4K if you have a compatible display, and 3D if you really want it, and all this crap. Yeah, so when it comes to TV displays now, you're talking about smart TV integration and then 4K. Not necessarily 3D is, thankfully, a gimmick that is dying a slow, painful death, and you're not really seeing that on a lot of consumer displays, and I would bet to say it'll be virtually gone in the next 3 to 5 years, just because the studies with the medical implications on the development of eyes in children under the age of 12, all that garbage. But more importantly, if Firefox OS launching on a name brand display such as Panasonic can not necessarily become the de facto standard, but at least a good implementation of what a smart TV software can look like, to where they can go, hey guys, we're doing really well. Either one, well, a number of things can happen, but more importantly, one of two. One, they will become the de facto standard, aka the leader, and really, really push innovation, not only through themselves, just push innovation and lead the market. Or two, they will cause some other front runners to sort of rise to the level, and we'll start to see better implementations of this software on these devices. Because as it is right now, like I said, there's no incentive for me personally. And I think that the argument can be made for most people to buy this, because it's tantamount to the fax copier scanner.
Right.
It's like, oh, you know, or, you know, like a washer dryer combo in the same unit. It's like, yeah, I kind of need both of these things, but I don't need them in the same device, especially when it comes down to, I don't want to get off on a huge tangent here. Slight side thing of that. Let's say that in the case of Samsung, with some of their TVs it was last year, they found out that, you know, with their microphones in it, with the voice activation, like, you can't turn that off. So there'll be some features in these smart TVs that not only can you not control, but after a certain point, you know, they're not going to be supported through software updates, because we're done with this model. You need to get the latest and greatest.
Yeah.
So you're also talking about obsolescence too.
Right. Yeah. It looks like LG might be the one who did the fridge, but they're not even dedicated to Ubuntu fully, because they have WebOS that they're putting on their televisions. Samsung is putting Tizen on their TVs. I truly believe the lightest and most flexible one is probably going to be the one that wins. And Firefox, we all know, was basically the first browser to really do plugins fantastically. So I expect that's going to be part of their architecture with this. I will say the TVs are currently being shipped in Europe. There is, looks like, 6 different TVs this year that they're going to release with Firefox OS on it. I will have the 6 models listed explicitly in the notes if you're interested. And this is where I'm stupid. I would like to have one of these, but probably just to play YouTube.
Oh, of course. Well, if it's running Firefox, what else can I put on it?
Well, I mean, because when I'm watching a big TV, I understand TV's going to have to migrate. It's going to have to change. It's going to have to become something else. We're going to have to try to have some interactive content while you're watching Snooki, NFL, or whatever, where you can chat with other people or whatever. But when I have a big, big, big screen in front of me, there's almost, and by almost, nothing on anything that I want to watch, except for maybe an educational YouTube video or maybe a documentary on Netflix. So if it can do Netflix in the browser, which now Chrome can, so Firefox has to be right there, I would think, and YouTube, I have all my needs met. And there's 6 models coming out this year, so at least you have some choice in what you get. So this is, I think, a good step in the right direction.
I couldn't agree more. And especially when you're talking about, you know, using YouTube with these devices. Another thing that's really prevalent, I mean, you were talking about, you know, cord cutters and the whole I don't have cable, you know, movement, or I'm not going to pay for satellite or cable anymore. Having a television in the home now, in most cases, especially in the cases of those folks, is not the concern. They simply need a display. Right. That's it. So in order for, in the time we're in now, I mean, you brought up, you know, WebOS, you brought up Tizen. It's not that people are going to go out. I don't think that people are going to rush out and buy it just because it has Firefox OS on it, period. That's not what's going to happen. But they're going to see Panasonic as an industry leader in the space. And there's also this experience on the device that if it takes off well, because really, just like with anything, the early adopters are going to reap the biggest benefits if it's done and implemented well and takes off in the eyes of the public. So I say more power to them. And I'm interested to see how it turns out. Because if it were like another, I mean, I'm going to name some brands here. If you disagree with me, by all means, don't send me an email. I don't care. But it would be one thing if it wasn't Panasonic, but if it was like a Memorex or an RCA or a Vizio that had this implemented, I'm like, I don't know, guys. But Panasonic, yeah, I'm all for it.
Yeah, now if it's a small Vizio 23-inch thing, I might buy it, but that's about it.
Mm-hmm. Because, there were no prices in the article, correct?
I did not see any, no. And even if they did, they would be in euros, which I have a hard time because I'm American and, you know, it's confusing.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, I want to bring this next one up just really quick. We really don't talk a lot about, dare I say, hardcore enterprise stuff, but this was something that I just wanted to bring up. This is an example to me of Red Hat trying their best to do what they think is right. We've been talking about cloud for, I don't know, 2 years, something. It's been a while. We've been talking cloud. And it's almost in like mid stride, it seems like, in people's minds, at least. You know, when I go into job meetings with other departments and agencies, I hear some people have what's called a cloud first initiative, where no matter what the project is, they have to first put it on a cloud. And if not putting it on the cloud, they have to justify why they don't put it on the cloud, because people perceive extreme cost savings, scalability, availability, yada, 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 yada. So it is in full swing. And Red Hat just unveils, or is in the process of unveiling, its first full stack cloud suite for applications, which is a mouthful. Okay. Over on ZDNet, and not Stevie Ray John Von Nichols, but some guy named Toby. I don't know who he is. Okay. Here's the gimmick. Red Hat, from what I gather, not being a Red Hat employee, what Red Hat wants to do is not deliver applications, not deliver servers, not deliver services, but they're trying to deliver support and environments, is the way that I think of it. They want to give you a complete ecosystem that is completely customizable from top to bottom on the inside, but it's in this structure of applications that they support, which allows for insane flexibility as long as you're okay with using their OpenShift platform and OpenStack platform. And they also have a PaaS solution, which is Platform Infrastructure as a Service kind of thing. And it allows for hybrid cloud management. Here's the whole key with this whole thing. You get this completely customizable stack from top to bottom, but it's also a hybrid solution, which means in my job 9-to-5, when I'm doing my work, I'm actually only pinging my internal servers. I don't have to go all the way out to the public-facing internet, wait for lag, wait for other things to happen, be maybe a security risk, and possibly have to worry about network outages. I can hit my internal cloud to it. A hybrid approach allows you to be both either or, completely on the inside on your private network, completely on the outside on the public internet, or actually both at the same time. So what Red Hat is offering here to me seems like a really good forward-thinking solution, a solution, not a product, but a solution that where you basically it allows you to fill the gaps with your own products. So this is really interesting. I will say there's a reason why this company is, and let me quote, stinking rich. It's because they're doing this kind of thing instead of tying people's hands into using specific applications or technologies. They're at least trying to be a little bit more open. So this is really, I think, good news for the cloud, quote unquote, as a whole.
Yeah, I need to look into that some more. But yeah, I saw the same article earlier this week. And it is nice to see the changes that they are doing and how they are embracing new technologies and literally, like you said, trying to provide the environment with which to do that in, because they're going to be successful if they provide you with not only the resources, but sort of the field to play on, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, yeah. And they're being very slow and methodical about their growth. This is what I really almost admire about them. They could really be herky-jerky, crazy, and just launch all this stuff and just, you know, whatever sticks to the wall kind of thing. But no, they're being very slow and methodical. You notice I didn't say the word container once or Docker once. That's because, that's because it's really not full prime time ready. It's growing, it's getting better, but it's not completely there yet. But I guarantee you, when it is, Red Hat's going to be one of the first companies offering a solution to handle your containers. So,
Have you heard of boxes on Fedora?
No, it's Fedora. I don't hear about nothing on Fedora.
Well, it's not that you don't hear about it. It's that if it does, it hits your ears like water on a duck and just flies right off onto the floor. But that is something very interesting. I got to play with that a bit recently, where I don't think it's so much containers, but it reminded me, it was a virtualized instance to run applications within Fedora, And they were at Linux Fest Northwest. They showed me three just crazy different apps running at the same time within these different enclosed environments. I thought, that is neat. And why haven't I heard of this before? And then I remembered, just like you said, oh yeah, it's Fedora. That's why I haven't heard of it.
Well, that's one reason. Yeah, this is a full virtual machine QEEMU infrastructure kind of thing. So it's really nothing. And this is an insult, but I don't mean it like this. This is really nothing more than an interface on QEMU to manage virtualization infrastructure and virtual operating system. And it's not an insult because it's needed. This is the kind of thing I truly believe people need. And I will say GNOME, it makes some pretty applications. So it should be simple and easy to use. I'll wait for it to grow out of being just on Fedora.
There you go. All right. I got one last thing I want to mention before we talk about our last two quick links here. The Steam Summer Sale is upon us. By the time you listen to this show...
What is that?
What? Are you kidding, Dor?
Tell me. Tell me more.
Every summer and every winter, Steam, the digital PC gaming service, has a insane sale, almost catalog-wide. Not just, oh, these 5 or 10 titles. I mean, you're talking up to 95% off some games. But traditionally, it's between 50 and 75%, if not more, off of just a huge amount of titles. Some flash hourly sales, some week-long sales, some daily sales. It's insane. So if you're at all into PC gaming on Windows, Mac, or Linux, now that we have over 1% of the Steam market share, which is sounds like not a lot, but it's in the bigger picture of things, it's a lot of users. Definitely, and this is just a speculative date from a number of sources, but hopefully within the next week, the summer sale will be live. Now, to prepare for this, the best thing you can do is to, if you don't already have a Steam account, just go to store.steampowered.com, create a free account, get yourself either personally, I don't like putting my credit card information into things online. Most things, I mean, Amazon or whatever, sure. But I go down to just about anywhere now sells the Steam gift cards. Yep. So you buy them for $20 or $50. You get your virtual currency loaded into your account, and you have that much to go buy games. Start stockpiling a little bit of that if you can. But more importantly, go on to your account, start looking through games you're interested in, add them to your wish list. Because then as the games come up on the sale, you can have it in your preferences where if the game on your wish list comes up on sale, you'll get a notification. Which you might think, well, won't I be getting a lot of notifications? Yes, maybe no. But
right.
The fact of the matter is if something is on sale for an hour for like 90% off and you miss it, you're going to be kicking yourself. So take it from me, forego the potential annoyance of a lot of notifications for a few days to save hundreds of dollars on games. I've been stockpiling a little bit here and there, and I have a decent amount on my account now that I plan to just spend like a kid in a candy store once this thing goes live. I cannot wait. Cannot wait. I got, I think, 285 games on my wish list right now.
Nice. Well, now, correct me if I'm wrong, there's two things you can do with a game. One of them is wish list, and I want to say maybe the other one is watch list or something. Wasn't there two things? Because I was confused which one to add a game to get notified about the sale.
I know that last year with the app on my phone, I was able to, I think it was through the wish list.
Okay. Well, the app's grown too, but in that last year, it's got.
Oh yeah, yeah, and the app on Android and iOS, if you have one of those phones, is also very good. Because yeah, otherwise you're just getting crazy email notifications all day. So have that set up and ready. But yeah, like I said, you don't want to miss out. And you know, I mean, if you're talking a $50 game for less than $10, in some cases less than $5, or they'll have huge, like, for instance, this is almost 3 years ago, but during their holiday sale, I got every single Valve game. I mean, it's probably close to 20 or 25 titles for $39.99.
Nice.
It was huge. So for $40, boom, I have access to every single game they've ever made, all the DLC, everything. It was just like a mega pack. And yeah, I have a lot of games on me. Most of the games I have on my watch list right now are under $10, so I'm hoping to scoop a lot of them up for $2 or $3 or less. And yeah, so add all into gaming, follow my instructions. Worst case scenario, you're getting notifications, you still don't buy the games. Hey, no big loss, but there will be that one game where you'll buy it and you'll think, thank God I listened to Cody. Because you want to know what? Why? Because I'm right. You're welcome.
Now, it's a stupid question. You know, could there, I don't know, I doubt it, but I feel stupid for asking, but I'm going to ask anywhere. Is there a podcast out there that you can think of that you could maybe subscribe to for in-depth reviews and how-tos and, place you can keep up with these kind of game things?
You betcha. Go over to linuxgamecastweekly.com.
Very cool.
Yeah, those guys, Pedro, Jordan, and of course, Ven Stone himself, and sometimes Sandy Martin, will give you all you need to know about a variety of games that play on Linux, for the most part, natively. And boy, if it is native, they usually just don't cover it. And if they're solicited by developers who don't have a native port, or not a native port, but a native install, then they tend to get a little hot and bothered, and understandably so.
Just a touch.
Yeah, but and that's also a great resource because let's just say you have a new or older Linux machine that can run some of these games. Because to be honest, traditionally PC gaming, the one big stigma is for the general public, oh, I have to have a completely just powerhouse machine to run anything. Not the case with the revival of a lot of platformer kind of indie titles. Even if you have a 5-10-year-old machine, I installed Steam on my Chromebook, my Acer C710 last month, and I was playing some fairly modern games on it with no problem whatsoever, with 2 gigs of RAM on a 1.7 gigahertz Celeron processor and an 11-inch screen. So, yeah, but if you really just don't know where to start and don't know anything about games, but you might want to throw a little bit of cash to either set it up for yourself or a family member or a friend, what have you, check out their show. That way, not only can you see footage of the game in action, but you can get honest, I mean, brutally honest reviews of some of these games. There have been some instances where I got caught up in the hype of some of the trailers for these, started reading reviews. I'm like, oh, that game sounds really good. And then I listened to their review, and they tore it to shreds. I was like, oh, I'm not wasting my money on that. These guys are making good points. They're not just bagging on it. They go in depth over a variety of categories to really dissect it and let you know, would they recommend that you go buy it or not, essentially. And I've always said this, but they're like those friends that you would go to, hey, what do you think about this game? Is it worth my time? And they will be brutally honest with you. So yeah, go check them out.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. I have not, there's nowhere close to as many games you have on your watch list. I got a couple. And if they come on sale, I will pop for them. I don't know when I'm going to have time to play them, but there's definitely a couple games out there that I would like to at least own. So when my son gets bored with Minecraft and Goat Simulator on Android, when he is ready to elevate his game, I'll be right there with him.
Now, don't be a defeatist and think, oh, but I don't have time to play all these. Just shut up and buy them, because one day you will.
I'm sure.
Oh, yes. All right, awesome. Adore, what kind of software are we using nowadays to record not only get in touch online, but also record the show in a video format?
Well, I got to remind people again, Jitsi, that is J-I-T-S-I. If you go to meet.jitsi.jit.c, you can run their WebRTC interface for a Skype-like, Google Hangout-like web chat. Unbelievably good quality. That's all I got to say. Unbelievably good quality. And we're using OBS over at obsproject.com for the actual streaming of it. And I will say, this is the first time, 3 times or so during this broadcast, we had the stream drop on us for at least a minute each. It might be my network connection. Don't know. But that was the first time I've had any issue with it. And I do not expect the issue to keep coming up week after week after week. Really, really impressed with this software, how it works. Super easy to actually resemble somebody who knows what he's doing.
Yeah, I was amazed with the quality of OBS and the horrendous issues that we were having with Google Hangouts. It was one of those awful things where it kept crashing on a variety of hardware, on a variety of different browsers. I mean, it wasn't just, you know, we did our, I should say, when I say we, I mean Door, did his due diligence, and I mean really, really dug into what's happening. And the minute we stopped using Hangouts for the show, all that went away.
Yeah, surprise.
Yeah, very, very happy with Jitsi so far. And if you haven't already, it's going to be more of an immersive experience soon once I actually get my video camera up, because who doesn't like looking at me talking to a microphone? But if you haven't already, or haven't lately, please go to, is it just the Pod Nuts YouTube channel, Door, for the show?
It's youtube.com/door2doorgeek is where all the Linux for the Rest of Us videos are being hosted at.
There you go. Yeah, go there and check out the last few episodes, because Door has a green screen in his home. He's doing some very creative things right now as far as recording live, throwing it on YouTube, utilizing the green screen with the web pages, and it's a much different video experience than any previous Podnuts show, dare I say. And I happened to not consciously be aware of it, but I was just stumbling around on YouTube the other day after we had one of our shows posted. I thought, yeah, I'll play this in the background while I'm cooking dinner or whatever. And I found myself not just listening to it, but watching it and going, that is pretty cool. So the fact that if you could follow along on video rather than just audio, if that's something that you would enjoy, Door has taken a great lengths into making that content a little more immersive and a lot more informational by way of using video. And it's all thanks to Jitsi and OBS.
Absolutely. And I will say Matthew Williams has literally, he's been doing a lot of the research. And by a lot of it, I mean, he's been doing all the research on the finer nuances with OBS. I don't have the newest of the newest version. Apparently you can do some keyboard shortcuts where even if OBS is not on the screen, you still perform those shortcuts. It will still do it. So that's really nice.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. So I got to definitely look into that. I think I have to do an upgrade. I'm learning a little bit more week by week by week. I will say I'm a trial by fire fella. I test in production, develop in production, debug in production, and do production in production. So hopefully it gets a little bit better each week. That's the goal.
Now, do you do it that way because you're living life on the edge and you wouldn't have it any other way, or are you just lazy?
Oh, it's not lazy. If it's not in production, it's not as exciting. It's not as demanding. Where if something go boom in production, I better get that stuff fixed really quick. If I break it in test or dev, I'll just start in production.
Think of it as a post-apocalyptic road machine. You need to get it out there on the sand to know how well it's going to hold up during the tornado/thunderstorm, correct?
Sounds right to me.
I've been wanting to watch Mad Max Fury Road for about a week now, and I have yet to do it. I'm trying to orchestrate it. Don't tell my wife this. I'm trying to orchestrate it to where I can stay late, wink, one night at work, and just because there's a theater not 100 feet away from my place of business, and I'm just going to pop over there, catch a showing of that, because, man, when you're talking about a Mad Max fan, Beyond Thunderdome scarred me as a child. Didn't even know about the first two films until, man, I don't know, three or 4 years later. Started watching those on an endless loop on, you know, basic cable. And a bit of fan ever since of the whole post-apocalyptic genre. I mean, you talk Waterworld, dude, get me some beer in a couple hours. We'll talk Waterworld. But man, everything I've heard about Fury Road, I cannot wait to see it.
Yeah, hopefully that and Star Wars make this a very good year for cinema. Wait and see.
Yep, yeah. And I'm going to say one thing really quick. It's going to make some people upset, and that's fine. I don't traditionally like the big blockbuster films. Like, I don't have any inkling to see the Avengers at all. And I'm one of the biggest comic book nerds you'll ever see. I worked in a comic book store for almost 5 years, but with good years in my teens. So I'm a comic book nut, couldn't care less about the Avengers. So my big budget movies this year, exactly like you just said, Dor, Mad Max and Star Wars.
Yeah. Too easy to comment on Avengers. It's like, you know, wearing out something that was successful in typical Hollywood fashion, just wringing it until it's dead and lifeless and no more liquid in it whatsoever.
Why? Because we don't have all the money yet.
Right.
Yeah. Speaking of not having all the money yet, if you want to forego seeing the Avengers, take that money that you would have spent on not only the ticket, but potentially the gas, the snacks, the soda perhaps, you know, the red vines, the jujubes, the Butterfingers, whatever you do buy, and consider using that money instead for not only a good meal, go out and treat yourself, but if you have a little bit of scratch left over, consider giving it to the Accessible Computing Foundation. Our good friend Jonathan Nato, who you heard a couple episodes ago right here on this very podcast, explains exactly all the endeavors that they are in the middle of, and not only continuing development of software that can be put into Linux distributions such as Sonar GNU Linux to help people get technology into the hands of people who would otherwise be left behind, those with disabilities. So head over to the acf.tk and you can just make a small donation if you'd like, or you can become a regular contributor for as little as $2 a month. And you would think $2 a month, does that really help? Yes, it does, because paying these developers to get this software obviously takes money and every little bit helps. So if you can spare it, please do it. I know that when I do it, and I see that little deduction come out of my account every month, I know that's going not only to a great cause, but it's going to a great cause headed by someone who is very passionate and getting things done in that space. And I couldn't be more proud of him. So thank you, Jonathan, for all the hard work. In fact, we got a great email today. We're going to save for next show about some exposure to those two projects that one of our listeners got and what he did with the information to better his local community, which I cannot wait to share with you guys next week. So, Dor, where can we find you online?
Easiest place is just to go to podnuts.com and click contact us, or send me an email at mail@podnuts.com. Or if you want to follow me on the socials, oh, that's another link I forgot. Google Plus, plus.google.com/door-to-door-geek. But Matthew shot me a link that I have bookmarked, but I did not pull for some reason. Open source social software. Basically like Facebook on your own server is what I'm going to say, just for the layman sake of it. I got to look at it, got to read about it, and got to see how mature it is. It's opensource-socialnetwork.org. Let me know, listeners, if this is something you're interested in. If you would like to have a quote-unquote Podnuts social network, this could be really cool. A place where we can control our own fate. And anytime someone posts anything political, religious, hateful, intimidating, we can just ban them. Why? Because we'll be the admins of it.
Boot. I was watching, it was Hack 5. How they built that Friendica server, and they have that going for their community. That might be something fun to set up. Yeah, if there's going to be a need for it. But yeah, let's do some research, cover it on a future show, maybe take a poll, throw it out there, see if anybody... I could think of at least 10 or 15 people who would be totally down for that. And who knows? There's got to be more out there, too.
You would think so, and I will say, here's the only thing I quote-unquote worry about it. It's PHP software to me, which means I better keep getting updates, because if WordPress is having a hard time making their system non-exploitable, everybody else in the world is going to have a hard time too. So hopefully this catches on. Hopefully this gets momentum. Hopefully this gets more devs behind it. Hopefully this matures into something really, truly usable by masses.
Testify, brother, testify. You can find me online. Best place is just on Google+. That's Cody Cooper, CodyCooper. You can also follow me at Cody Cooper on Twitter. Not as active there lately, but I'm getting back on that horse. I'm going to ride it off into the sunset. So you want to hear me ramble? Oh, for instance, it's not family friendly, but I'm going to, I don't think I did it already. Yeah, I'll post it after the show. But somebody in one of my circles posted a heavy metal band name generator.
Yes.
And I'm standing in line waiting for a hot dog, and I thought, okay, I'm going to hit this once, and if it's a good enough name, I'm going to go track down some bandmates, buy a guitar, and start a band. And I'm thinking about starting this band because I got to tell you, just from the name alone, I think we'll have a pretty good career.
Good.
But I can't say the name on the show. So if you want to know what that name is, follow me on Google Plus. I'll post a screenshot and you can go download the, or you can go to the website yourself and generate your own heavy metal band name.
Very cool.
Yeah. If you want to send an email to the show, please send it to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. We have a few in the hopper we're going to address on a show soon. I know I've been saying that for a couple episodes, but I mean it this time, baby. It's fine. We're going to get through this. It'll be good. In addition to emails, please send us a voicemail, which we haven't received in a while, to 7076-PODNUT. That is 707-676-3688. Try to keep it under 60 seconds. If it goes a little long, that's fine. If it's longer than maybe 2 minutes, try breaking it up into a couple of them. We'll play two of them. No problem. And once again, thank you so much for all of your support through some of our affiliate links. I'm talking, of course, about podnuts.com/Amazon/Newegg and /eBay. If you're making purchases at any of these sites, please use those affiliate links because not only will you be presented with the website as normal, no interface change whatsoever, but any purchase you do make, a little portion of that goes back to us to help fund the costs to keep the lights on and to do some very, very creative and giving things, including purchasing some of this stuff in order to give away, such as the Nexus 4, the BeagleBone Blacks, the swag, all that stuff. And trust me, rest of 2015, we got a lot more coming down, especially since you guys have been so great about supporting us with those links, and we thank you for it. If you also want to support the network, please head over to podnuts.com/deals. A variety of video and software packages you can purchase there if you're a computer repair person. I want to educate yourself a little bit in different areas of tech. Please check that out. And who doesn't want one of the PodNuts hats that sits upon Door-to-Door Geek's head? Shirts and also other variety of clothing items by going to podnuts.com/clothing. Check that out. You can purchase that. We get a little kick from that too. And then you can wear it all about town and spread the word of PodNuts to everybody that sees you. Once again, thank you so much for listening to the show. We really, really do appreciate all of the feedback we're getting from the community. We like to hear and see how this show is impacting you because that makes it more fun for us and it makes me a little more grounded in knowing that I'm helping others and having a good time doing it on top of hanging out with my good buddy every week. So thank you once again. And please remember, ultimately, that Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.